This presentation is brought to you by 5000bc.com.
Today we're going to speak to Brian and Jeff Eisenberg. Jeff and Brian, you probably heard of them, but let me say these are the nicest guys I know in New York. And we're going to talk today about three very specific things: persona, abandonment, and driving customers. We're going to find out from Jeff and Brian, because these guys really know their stuff. How do I know they know their stuff? It's very simple. Brian, let's talk about Brian. Brian is actually a co-author of the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and USA Today best-selling Call to Action. If you haven't already read that book, it's been out for a while, then you've got to read it. He's also been part of Persuasive Online Copywriting, The Marketer's Common Sense Guide to E-Metrics, and he teaches at Roy Williams Wizard Academy. Brian is also, and get this, an inventor of persuasion architecture, for which a patent is pending, which then takes us to Jeffrey. And Jeffrey is the guy who co-founded Future Now Inc. with Brian in 1998. So Jeffrey's been and is currently the CEO of Future Now Inc., and it's a marketing consulting boutique, as he calls it. It's based in New York City. It's focused on helping its client increase conversion rates. Well, don't just sit there, both of you guys. You're not going to help just your clients. You're going to help our clients as well, and you're going to get them to convince them to buy your book with all the information that you're going to give us today. Is that right?
Well, we hope so, and thank you for saying we're such nice guys. I mean,
well, we study the nicest guys in New York.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, let's just put it this way. If we spend time reading these guys' bios, we'd be here all day. So let's just go straight into the topic conversation. You guys ready?
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. Three topics we're going to cover today: persona, abandonment, and driving customers. Tell me, let's start with persona. You know, there are diverse marketing or market segments out there. How do you know who's coming to your website?
Fundamentally, I think one of the things that most people don't take time in understanding is really who comes to their website. And there are a number of ways to dig into that. So one of the first ways we dig into it is by actually looking through the analytics of what people have come and how they've come to our site, where they're being referred to, you know, referred by, and also what search keywords they're using. Because the keywords, the language that you use, tells us a lot about our customers. And obviously that's a first piece. We'll then go in, and I think it's really critical that any business owner needs to really spend time listening to their customer service questions and going through the customer service emails and looking for the language and the questions that keep popping up and the questions that people ask. It really starts giving you a great sense of why people are buying for different reasons. And, of course, you know, you can ask them more questions and get more information that way. But this starts giving you a picture of who your customers and who your prospects are.
So language, what kind of language? Give us an example. What do you mean by language?
Well, I mean, we can give you an example from one of the sites that we were working with called Leo Schachter Diamonds, right? And so, you know, we were seeing people come in for terms like perfect diamond compared to someone who's, you know, who's typing in, you know, learn about the four C's. They tell us those are usually not the same type of person, right? Or the person who's typing in diamond certification is not the same person who's saying, okay, the perfect diamond.
Right. You know, Brian, why don't we actually expand on that a little bit? The way to think about it, because you've just used some shorthand, right, is that the person who says a perfect diamond is actually looking for something that's maybe a little bit less quantitative. They're asking for quality, right? So this is a person who's saying, I want the perfect diamond. On the other side of that is somebody who's saying, I want to know more about, you know, I want to learn about the diamond, or I want to learn about the four C's. These are people much more concerned with the details about a diamond or things like certification, okay? Now, they're unlikely to be the same kind of person because they wouldn't be looking at it from the same perspective. Or you can also look at language a different way. If we were looking at a query, let's say that you sold DVDs on your website, right? And you would actually put in compare DVD players, and you saw that's how they arrived at that they basically arrived at your site because they had entered in that search term versus somebody who typed in a Sony and a model number. Okay, that person is interested in a specific one. The other person who typed in, you know, compare DVD players is probably much earlier in their search and therefore has a whole list of different concerns. Does that help, Sean?
Absolutely. I mean,
okay, thank you.
So obviously we're speaking to different kinds of people, and this brings in this guy called Alan Cooper. How does he figure in all of this?
It's interesting. Alan Cooper wrote a book back in 1998, I believe it was, called The Inmates Are Running the Asylum. And he was the first person to actually talk about using what he called personas for designing software applications. And he said, you know, it helped people get a better sense of what functionalities people were going to use and that kind of stuff. But the concept of marketing or writing to personas is not just as new as 1998. And we actually only discovered Alan Cooper way later on in our process when we realized that, you know, John Steinbeck talked about writing to one person, real or imagined. Sid Field, when he talks about screenwriting, he talks about how do you create characters that people find believable. And all we were trying to do is create these personas so that when we were writing marketing copy to them, essentially we were able to empathize with them.
Right. I mean, essentially a persona, Sean, is very much of a storytelling
technique.
What happens is this. If I describe to you in an abstract sense, and I said to you, okay, you know that guy who's looking for that specific DVD, he's between 18 and 24 years old, and he lives in the northeast of the United States, and his income is, you don't get a picture of him in your head. You don't know what he looks like or how he dresses or what he thinks about or what he sounds like. However, if I told you a story, if I said, look, this guy Mike, okay, needs to buy a present for his younger sister. She's just turning 13. She wants a DVD player. And Mike's a really nice guy. He's just started his job right after graduating college. He's not earning a lot of money. He's concerned about price, but he doesn't want, you know, he wants to do the right thing by his sister. Does that give you a better feel for the person and how they might be looking at something than a bunch of just demographics?
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. And so a persona is the storytelling that we wrap around all that boring data in order to get people to be able to empathize, in order to be able to address that market segment as if it was a real human being.
Right, and the other part to realize is, you know, Alan Cooper even points this out to in his book, and he mentions the difference that between marketing personas and design personas. And the problem with what most people are using on the web is they've learned from people like Alan Cooper about design personas. And their concept falls behind what we call users. And there is nobody who comes to your site who's a user of your site. They're a visitor, a prospect, a potential customer. They're there voluntarily. They don't have to use your site. So our personas will focus a lot more on understanding their key motivations than on how they may use our website.
Right. I mean, Sean, again, you know, Brian starting, and then we've developed a little rhythm here. But in order to understand the difference between a user and a visitor, it's really simple, okay? When I used to work in a bank, okay, and I had to use a spreadsheet, I had to use the spreadsheet. If I went into my boss one day and said, you know, I'm just going to keep those numbers in my head, don't worry about it, I don't think he would have been very happy, and I probably would have been fired. So the thing is that a spreadsheet is a tool, and the concept that most people still develop websites under is this concept that they're building software, that they're developing a tool. The difference between that and treating somebody like a visitor, like a human being, is the way that perhaps a supermarket is laid out or a really well-run store where they've thought about accommodating the person, making sure that people see things in the right place at the right time because they're there as volunteers. They don't have to. If I walk into a store that I don't like, I can walk out. And the thing is that your website's not a tool. There's nobody holding a gun to your visitor's head. If they don't have a great and persuasive experience, they can just click away.
It's all about scratching their itches.
Okay, so here's where it gets confusing. So I'm going to start, you know, we're talking about persona, we're talking about these kind of people that we know, and yet, I mean, how do you put a page together? You know, do you have like, you know, three different pages, or what are you really looking for? Or what are you looking to create? I mean, how would a small business or a medium business or any business for that matter write for three different audiences or four different audiences? Is that what you're saying?
Jeff, why don't you start this one?
Okay. Well, first, the problem that most people have in wrapping their heads around this is the idea that you are writing for that when you write, you're writing like you write a direct copy letter. And it's interesting, Sean, because you're one of the best copywriters that I know, and your copy is really engaging. And, I mean, it's just terrific. I mean, just earlier today, you put out a newsletter. I read it. I said, wow, this is really good stuff. Or it was yesterday afternoon, because I read it this morning. And it talked about, people sort of moving around and how you wanted to gain control by asking questions. Terrific, right? So you're a great copywriter. Most people are not. And what you do by instinct, okay, is write in a very linear way, okay, something that addresses a great deal of the audience. How does the average person get to do this on a website? Well, first, they need to understand that people on a website don't necessarily read the entire page. They're skimming and scanning the page for the stuff that interests them. So first of all, the right use of things like headlines and subheadlines, bulleted lists, bolding and hyperlinks, which we insist really should be, standard, underlined blue hyperlinks. First of all, that's going to draw people's attention to where they're most interested. Second, there's an order to things. In other words, we know that if we were dealing with, let's say, three different children who are our children, that we know whose needs we need to address first. It's the most impatient one. And so I'll give you a personality type that would deal with that. If we had a story about a persona that was very aggressive, very assertive type of personality, they want it all now, and they don't have any patience, well, you know what? Let's give them the punchline first, right? And so then we can go ahead and deal with that really methodical persona, the one who needs to know every last detail. Well, you know, once they have the punchline, they'll read all the way to the bottom of the page. Take it easy. Relax. Give them all the information that they need. On the other hand, a highly emotional persona, somebody who's going to make decisions in a more spontaneous way, give them the punchline and explain why. Real quickly, let's get to the point. Let's give them the why, the emotional connection, and the emotional logical connection for them that actually tells them, okay, this is why I want to do things. So I hate to answer your question in such a short way, because the truth is, you know, that we do a 3-day seminar on exactly that question. But there are techniques to do this. The answer is it can be done. It gets done. And in our first book, Persuasive Online Copywriting, we went into a great amount of detail about how you write for different personality types on the same page.
Okay, since you're mentioning we don't have time to do a 3-day seminar, though we could keep you on the phone for 3 days. I don't know what kind of bill I would get all the way from New Zealand, but let's talk about three. Three stages. You mentioned three stages in creating a persona. What are they, and why are they important?
Well, the first one is what we call the topology, right? We need to understand the marketplace, the products, what you're trying to sell, what are the conditions affecting it, how people typically go about buying it. Because whether you're buying a pencil for yourself or for a business, you're still buying a pencil, right? It's a simple sale. And so we want to understand the sales complexity. Then we go on and we work on psychographics, right? Those are more related to how people gather information, how they make purchase decisions, whether they're more methodical, whether they're more assertive, whether they're more, humanistic. And then the last one is where we apply the demographic stage to it, which helps us round out more of the story and obviously sharpen the details for what we've seen beforehand.
We've got these three stages. We've got, you know, all of these three stages in a line. But there's also the concept of a primary persona. Does this actually play a part, or is it totally irrelevant?
Well, again, you know, primary persona comes from that whole concept of users and, you know, design personas, right? If I'm going to have one person, you know, if I'm going to build, you know, a word processing software application, I'm going to try to design my menu structure in such a way that most users could get the most out of it. And for the extreme user, right, we can hide some menus and they can go digging looking for it, which is very much what Microsoft Office has done, correct?
Yes.
The difference is, on the web, which part of your customers do you want to cut out? Who do you not want to allow to buy from you?
Is there such a thing?
That's exactly it. It's ludicrous. And so what we need to do is design and plan for each one of our market segments so they can buy the way they want to buy. If we neglect any of them, that's why we see pitiful conversion rates.
Okay, so then what's a person to do? I mean, where do they start the personas? Where do they go? And more importantly, how does a business know if they've got a persona right or wrong?
The thing is that in order to start, you just have to start somewhere. In other words, sometimes what's worth doing is worth doing wrong. The way that you know whether you've understood the personas or not is when you actually set up your site. Okay, and hopefully you've done some of the research. You've done more than what we've said on this call. You've read our books. You've possibly read some of our articles online. You go ahead. You develop your persona, and you set up a site, or you test a campaign, or however it is that you're going to utilize this persona. The way that we think about sales online is that when somebody doesn't buy from us, it's not that we've addressed the wrong audience or anything else. What we're thinking of it is we've misunderstood our personas. So in other words, as people come and come to the site and don't do what you expected them to do, that's when you'll know that it wasn't exactly right, and you'll adjust based on your assumptions. Because one of the things is that when you use personas for designing your a site persuasively, you make a lot more conscious decisions about every word that you put in, every image that you put in. You know the whys. You know who you were trying to appeal to and why you were trying to appeal to them and what you thought would catch their attention versus something else. So you can go back and start working based on those assumptions and saying, okay, this is something I can change, or, you know what, it looks like the things that I expected these other two personas to do, they're doing. But the one that I expected this third persona to do, they're not doing. Maybe I've really just misunderstood them.
Can you give us an example of personas that you've created for one of your clients?
I'm going to give you an example, again, for the Leo site. And I'm not going to use the real name. I'm going to use the name that we use for purpose of illustration. The name is called Natalie Goldigger. Okay?
Okay.
And I guess that this pen name that I've given her probably explains everything to you. And I'm going to contrast her with another persona that we did called David Common Sense. Now, let me give you this idea, right? Here we have the number one diamond brand in North America, okay? No branded diamond sells more than the Leo diamond, okay? And so we have a lot of reasons for buying diamonds. Now, David Common Sense is this guy who's an accountant. And, you know, he knows that it's not all about the logic, right? He's marrying this girl named Emily, and he knows that Emily is going to be thinking to herself, oh, I hope David does the right thing, and I hope he spends a little bit more than he can, and that kind of thing. But these people are clearly buying one way. Now, on the other hand, Natalie is that person who her mom told her once, you know, it's just as easy to fall in love with somebody who has money as somebody who doesn't. She might as well fall in love with somebody who has money. She's a little spoiled, okay? She's looking for status, and the way that she would buy a diamond is completely different than the way David would. See, David's actually going to put the money down, but Natalie isn't going to put the money down at all. Natalie is going to drag her fiancé, right, not yet fiancé, but her boyfriend, into the store and start to show him what it is that she expects. And, you know, and she'll make it pretty obvious that anything under 2 carats needs a microscope.
Okay.
So these are two very, very divergent personas, and yet if you go to the leodiamond.com and you try and flow through the site, if you pretend you're either one of these people, okay, you'll find that there's a path that you can navigate the site through.
Right, a completely different experience. Right, a completely different experience for each one. And the other thing is that each of the personas, you know, when you show them to your customer service people, to your salespeople, to... they should recognize these people. Say, oh, yeah, you know, I just spoke with them last week.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
That will give you a good indication of whether you're on the right path or not.
Okay. I think we'll go a little deeper into that when we get to the linking part, because it's kind of making a lot of sense, the persona and the linking. So that's the third part in today's conversation. Let's just go to the second part today, which is abandonment. Why do customers leave?
Because you stop telling them anything they care about.
Okay.
They don't find what they're looking for.
Okay.
And it's not always necessarily a product, right? I mean, if I went ahead and I was looking for a red sweater and you didn't have a red sweater, okay, I'd leave. But on the other hand, you may have that red sweater and I still couldn't find it. I may still leave. But let's talk about a different kind of site, okay? Let's say that I'm in the market for a phone system for the office. I happen to be in the market for a phone system for the office. And I've gone to several different sites. What I'm looking for is I'm looking for somebody to give me in just a snapshot of what it would be like to do business with them, okay? And so me, Jeffrey Eisenberg, as a persona, if you had to tell my story, okay, I know that I've gone to website after website and left after a couple of pages because nobody's answering my questions. And my questions are not so unreasonable. My questions are, what is the magnitude of the investment that I'm looking at, and how scalable is it? As we grow, will it be worthwhile? Now, if you can't give me an idea of that on the website, if I have to talk to a salesperson in order to get those answers, I don't want to talk to you at all.
Right. They've missed the whole purpose of the website.
I mean, for companies that do lead generation, okay, if they think that by withholding information, they're going to get people to call a salesperson, they're sadly mistaken because
they're getting them to call their competitor salesperson.
Ah, this is true. Okay, but what happens is that people use the web to avoid salespeople. Give the information. So that's really why people abandon. People abandon because they're not finding something relevant to them. There's a question being asked that they're not answering.
So are you saying it all boils down to frequently asked questions, put all the frequently asked questions out there?
The thing is, if you have a frequently asked question page on your website, okay?
Yes.
I strongly recommend, okay, that you take it down.
Okay.
Strongly recommend that you take it down. And it's very simple. If these are the frequently asked questions, why aren't they part of your main content? Why do people have to look in a place called Frequently Asked Questions?
Sorry, which when was the last time you actually spent some time going through someone's FAQs?
The one topic that we talked about in great detail was, you know, comparing pages, which is exactly or somewhat similar to what Jeffrey was talking about, where I was trying to buy a little recording device, and I went to lots of websites, and the websites where the price of the same device was cheaper, but I didn't have enough information, and I was going, maybe I need to buy it from the other website, which has more information. It was also more expensive, the product. It seemed like the same model number, but I didn't know. So all of my questions were being answered.
Yeah, I mean, you're expressing it exactly right. It's all about your confidence level. Right, if your customer is not confident that you're going to be the right solution, they're getting the right value, that they're choosing the right product, that you're a reputable company, that if there's a problem, how are they going to deal with a return? If you're not dealing with all of those issues, they're going to abandon.
Right, and we've all had this happen. We've all of us walked into a store and not bought something, and then at some point, very soon after, we walked into another store, and all of a sudden, it became the right day, the right price. Right, before we didn't know, oh, is it the right thing? Should we really do it? It's always sales is about a transference of confidence.
That's right, yeah. So if when we look at, you know, customers and casual browsers, so there's lots of people come to our website every single day. How do we know who's a customer, who's just browsing?
Well, there are basically four types of traffic and three types of buyers.
Okay.
The first type of traffic that we have is the wrong kind, right? That's the person who typed in Rolling Stone, and they meant the magazine, not the music group, and, you're the music group. Right? There's always a small percentage of traffic that is unqualified, untargeted, or mistargeted, right? But let's call that 5, 10, 15% of our traffic. The rest of our traffic, the other 85%, is made up of the three types of buyers. The first type of buyer knows exactly what he wants. Like Jeffrey said, you know, he knows the model number. He knows, you know, Sony, you know, XYZ 3522, right? He knows exactly what he wants. So that's one type of buyer. And there is no reason why, if he knows exactly what he wants and you have it, he shouldn't convert.
Okay.
Right? Or, you know, reasonably, right? I mean, there's always there's some reason why not. But for the most part, the majority of those should convert. When our good friend Jared Spool did some experiments with sites where he put people on the site with the money for the product, he knew that the product they were looking for was on the site, he found that sites only converted 30% on average out of the 100% of that category of buyer.
Why was that?
Mostly because either they couldn't find it or they couldn't figure out how to check out or it didn't answer all the rest of their questions.
Okay.
The second type of buyer knows approximately what he's looking for, right? He wants to compare, you know, the Sony with the Toshiba.
Okay.
And now he just needs to know which is a better value for him. He wants to buy. He's obviously showing intent to buy, but he just doesn't know which one is exactly right for him.
Okay.
And then the last type of traffic is the one who knows, you know, approximately. He's interested in DVD players, but, you know, he may buy one today. He may buy one 6 months from now. But he has some kind of intention, otherwise he wouldn't be looking for DVD players. He wouldn't be spending his time. He may not buy today, but if he was presented with, you know, a top-of-the-line Sony for $5, he'd probably buy it, right?
Yes.
So it's not a question of the price, but can we present him enough value to maybe motivate him to buy today?
Okay.
And again, you know, are we saying that we should get 100% conversion? You know, not in a million years.
Okay. What I'm saying is there are the three types of buyers that you just defined were, one, the person that's just window shopping, the second person that's pretty much got the money, wants to buy but is not sure, and the third person has the money, knows the model number, wants to buy. Is that what we're looking at?
Yes, that's what we're looking at.
Okay. With Leo Diamonds, you increased the conversion rate from 86% to 54.1%. Oh, no, sorry, from 0.86 to 54.1%. Tell us about it. How did you do that? How did you get the conversion rate up so much?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because we used exactly the same designers, exactly the same copywriters, exactly the same developers, and the only difference was the process that we talk about called persuasion architecture. We went ahead and we created these personas out of research they already had. They didn't need to do any more. We went ahead and wireframed this copy out and basically gave it to the same designer, and they went ahead and very simple. I mean, you know, it sounds a lot harder to get 5,500%, okay, increase.
Okay.
I mean, you know, to go 55 times greater than you were. But, you know, I know that you might be familiar with a story that Brian Tracy tells about the winning edge, right? You've heard of that, haven't you, Sean? Right? And when he talks about that, the very, very, very best salesman probably earns 50 to 100 times more than the average salesperson, not the worst salesperson, the average salesperson. And so the question is that person really doing things? Is that person working 100 times harder? Can't be, right?
No.
Because at the end of the day, there's only 24 hours in that day.
That's right.
Right? So what happens is that when you're talking about sales, and make no mistake, people call it web marketing. But the difference between traditional marketing, web marketing, is that in web marketing, you also have to make the sale. You actually have to take the money, okay, which is very different than just driving people into a store, which traditional marketers do, okay? So Brian Tracy likes to use this example where he talks about a racehorse, right? And so you can win the Kentucky Derby, okay? And if you win it by a nose, nothing more than a nose in a photo finish, you win 10 times the price money than that horse who finished a nose behind, less than an inch behind.
That's
and
right.
The thing is that that's usually all it takes. We just worked a little harder at figuring out what we wanted to say before we actually went ahead and said it. If more people would do that, if they would spend more time planning their website, if they would plan how people are going to buy, what they're going to think, what the questions might be, they would also get similar type of results.
Yeah, Jeff, you know, it reminds me of we have a good friend who's one of the contributors to the book. Her name is Tamara Adlin. And in the book, we don't say what company she works for, but she happens to work for Amazon. And what's interesting that, you know, she shared some of the best tips in the book. You know, my favorite one is, for heaven's sake, don't let them, you know, let them pee. But she has in her signature line of all her emails, and I think that this really explains it so well, and here it goes, design twice, build once.
With Leo Diamonds, you just use the same system, but you just you pretty much thought through the whole process. What about Cafe Press? The abandon rate was mostly shopping cart related. How did you bring that down?
In that, it's very similar in the sense that we're always basically asking the same three questions, which are: the first question is, what do we want the person to do? Okay? In the shopping cart, it's very simple, right? What we're doing is we're moving from step to step to collecting information and confirming it to them, right? So first step is we're asking, what do we want them to do? The second question is, who are we asking to do that, right? Because as we discussed, Natalie Goldiger and David Common Sense had two very different motivations for doing whatever it is that they want to do. And the third question, this is the critical question, is depending on who we're talking to, how do we motivate them to do it? And so what happened was that the people at Cafe Press, who knew us well, had been readers of ours for a very long time, and already had a great checkout process to begin with.
Right.
They basically challenged us, and we're people who just sometimes can't turn down a challenge. And they said, listen, we know that in the industry it's very normal to have a 75% abandonment rate on a shopping cart. We've already gotten it to 35. There's no way that you could get it any lower. And you know what? We put down a bet. Now, the interesting thing is when you do it as business, it's not a bet. It's called a pay-for-performance contract. And basically, we did this bet, and we went ahead and decreased it to 15%. That means that from people who start the shopping cart process to the confirmation page where you are thanked and the order is on the way, 85% of the people get through. That's a total flip on the rest of the industry. And it was just by always the same principles. We're just designing it one click at a time.
We've covered persona. We've covered abandonment. Let's go into the third part, which is driving customers. So you've got this wonderful linking system, as it were. Tell us about it. It's all related to persona, isn't it? I mean, here you were describing earlier today how we have this guy who's really impatient and he's going to click on something. And then there's this other person who's very methodical and she's going to click on something else. So can you explain to us how the linking system works? How does a person actually navigate through a website?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start first. So I mentioned before we start with a lot with keywords, or we will call value words, because not everything is a search keyword. But there's a number of benefits to our system that help people not only in their search engine rankings, but obviously in their persuasiveness. And I'll explain how it all works. So let's take an example of, find a jeweler. Okay, just we're going to use those words.
Okay.
Right, and you can imagine someone typing in the words find a jeweler, right?
Okay.
And if you owned a jewelry store, you know, you'd probably want to have a pretty good, a pretty good chance that you'd want to rank for that.
Okay.
Well, Leo Diamond has a page one ranking on Google for find a jeweler.
Okay.
And the reason being is we took that term and we said, okay, which persona probably be the ones who would use that phrase. And we planned as they would start what we call their scenario, from the moment they may come in, whether they use that phrase to begin with or they use it later on, that we would find it within hyperlinks of the page, within the copy. And it happens to be in the navigation, everything like that. And the way everything is constructed, when we first did our initial rankings, search engine ranking studies for Leo Schachter, we found that they only had 35 external sites linking to them, but they had over 534 internal links. That means, you know, link from one page to the next page to the next page, all within its own site.
That's right.
And they were achieving a tremendous amount of page one rankings. And what we found was the search engines go crazy because what they want to see is relevance. It's what information architects or usability people call scent. It's what everybody else calls relevance. So if you go ahead and you plan link to link, and then when you're working on the copy, you're telling people in the link what they should be seeing on the next page, well, guess what the search engine starts to do, saying, well, you just told me that page is about finding a jeweler. Well, I read the copy on the page, and yeah, it's about finding a jeweler. Oh, that must do well for finding a jeweler.
Right, and then it follows that link, and guess what? There's an address of a jeweler, and so it's relevant again.
So it's pretty much like a table of contents. I mean, you open a book, you look at the table of contents, and then you get to the right page. That, and on the right page, you've got exactly what the table of contents said. Is that a good analogy?
That's about as simple as you can make it. And the answer is yes. I mean, for those people who spend all this time worrying about algorithms for search engines, see, the thing is this. There's a lot of search engine optimization firms, and they like to promise the world, okay?
Okay.
But the idea is this. They may have a couple of smart people working for them. They may have people who know the algorithms. But on the other side of that, a company like Google has dozens, literally dozens, of PhD, you know, like rocket science type people who their only purpose in life is to figure out better and better what will be relevant for a human being. Because the ultimate wish of Google is that every time you type in something, you'll actually find what it was you were looking for.
And besides which, human beings are the only ones that have credit cards. Search engines don't have credit cards. So if you focus just on the human being part of it, you'll always do better in the long run.
Just focus on making sure that every time that you click on something, that it gives you exactly what it was that you were promising. I know that this sounds bizarre. Maybe not to you, Sean, because you've been with us, but there's no black magic here. There's no big secrets. There's a process that we've developed for doing this, but it works because it must work. Because if I just keep giving you what you want in exactly the order that you asked for it, whenever you asked for it, you just say, thank you. That's it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Sean, it kind of reminds me of we do this in public with a card deck. And, you know, I'll try to give you a rough example of this verbally, and it'll kind of make sense to you, really good illustration. Sean, you're familiar with the deck of cards, aren't you?
Yep.
Can you pick one? Any card from the deck. Think of one.
Okay. Ace of Spades.
The Ace of Spades. Okay. No matter what question I ask you, please do not get anywhere. Don't answer anything that would lead you to the Eight of Spades. Is that fair?
Okay.
Okay. So out of the 52 cards in a deck, there are red ones and black ones. Which would you prefer?
Red ones.
That would leave us with which ones?
Black ones.
Terrific. Out of the black ones, there are spades and there are clubs. Which do you prefer?
Spades.
Great. You said spades?
Yes.
Great. Out of the spades, there are even number ones and odd number ones. Which do you prefer?
Even.
Even ones? And you see how I'm sort of leading you down each one, and I know where you want to get. I know your goal, right? Your goal is to buy something from me. And all I'm doing is by asking you the right questions that are relevant to where you're at each step, I'm moving you along in the process. And it's like, you know, the whole concept in sales of getting the seven yeses.
Yes.
It's the same thing of getting the seven yeses as people clicking through the sites.
Okay, that's a very good example because that kind of quickly tells me what I'm looking for. So should a business be driving customers down a path? But you're saying that they should get the customers, so they should create two paths or three paths and let the customers choose wherever they want to go. Is that right?
I think you got it exactly. You know, you can't drive a customer anywhere. You can lead a customer down a path. They've got to be able to choose it. But if you don't give them enough, you know, bait to basically follow one road or another, why should they keep clicking?
The customer goes from page one to page two, from page two to page three. You've actually got seven steps along the way, but at page three, the customer has decided, yes, I would like to buy. So do you have to have a call to action on every single page?
Well, so here's what's interesting. We actually talk about two different types of pages, two different types of hyperlinks. And this hopefully will make it sense, because you're right, you know, a path is not always so linear as one to seven. And what we say is everybody's familiar with one type of hyperlink, which we call calls to action, right? You know, the best way to usually construct those are with an implied benefit, you know, with an imperative with an implied benefit attached to it, right? Like, you know, click here to save now. And those pages are usually at what we call our, like, sales pages, our waypoints. Those are the pages that we really want customers to see because we want to move them forward in our sales process. And those are almost always linear and hierarchical and move people forward towards a close. The second types of pages, or the second type of hyperlinks, are what we call points of resolution. Now, the points of resolution are these hyperlinks where somewhere in the process, someone has a question that they need answered before they have enough resolve or confidence to keep buying from us. And so they may deviate from our path, and that's okay. If from that point of resolution and from that, you know, that resolving door page, as we like to call it, they have a link back into the sales process. Because the customer always needs to feel that they're in control and they can buy when they're ready to buy. But, I mean, yes, you know, do we want to have a call to action on every page? Yes, we want to move them forward towards the close. But remember, call to action at different stages means different things.
Right. I mean, for example, Sean, okay, if you were asking somebody to spend $200,000 on a consulting engagement with you, right, you probably wouldn't want to ask that directly the first time you meet, okay? But you would ask for something that furthers the communication. In other words, you might say if that first meeting went exquisitely well and you agreed to everything, you might say, would you like to set up a meeting so that I can bring you a proposal?
Okay.
That's very different than saying, would you write me a check for $200,000? It's just there's an appropriateness of what to ask and when.
Okay. So now imagine I've got cross purposes. I want one person to subscribe, another to buy. What do I do?
Well, again, you know, the thing is, I know that you like examples, and the way sometimes that you're asking these questions are a little bit more abstract. So that's a good example, okay? If you come to our website, thefuturenowinc.com website, we would very, very, very much like you to buy. In fact, the reason we'd like you to subscribe to our newsletter is to become familiar with our content. You may not buy today, but one day you may buy a book. One day you may come to a training seminar. One day you may buy one of our assessment products, right? There's a time where I'll want you to buy. But today, if you came today, you could get a free newsletter, okay, that comes out regularly and gives you a couple of articles that are useful for you to learn for your website. Now, the thing is that in this case, it becomes fairly obvious how to make the distinction, because I'm distinguishing between something that you can do right now that's free versus something that might cost you some money. Okay? But again, it depends on where you're at. If you went ahead and started with somebody who had just met you for the been introduced to you for the very first time, Sean, right?
Yes.
And they wanted to sign up for, let's say, the Psychotactics newsletter,
yes,
that would be a great first step. Now, I'm not saying that somebody wouldn't be,
we should discourage them from buying today.
Right. I mean, we certainly don't want to discourage them from buying today. In fact, I'd highly recommend every single one of your products. I mean, I think you've done a phenomenal job with them. But there is a a time where it's appropriate. If on your website all you had was one huge add to cart button, okay, it would be insulting the reader's intelligence. And so the way that this gets handled is by letting people self-select. People know when they're ready to buy. Believe me. In fact, part of the biggest problem that most salespeople have is that they're dealing with people, and this is in person, that they're dealing with people who aren't ready to buy yet. And so the job is to help get them there, okay, or to find those that are already there.
And then make it easy for them to buy once they're ready to buy.
Absolutely.
Okay. You've actually given a lot of really great information today, but I've got one little question, and then I'll leave you to add your own comments. So if someone was starting up a website from scratch, what would they do? What are the aspects they need to look at so that they can get the customer from start to purchase?
The very, 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 very first thing that they need to do is look at what they're actually selling. Okay? Is to understand why people buy it. Because people don't buy pens because they need pens. They buy pens because they want to write. And people buy pens to write because they want to sign checks, because they want to write a novel. In other words, what you need to do is you need to start defining the stories, what it is that people are really buying, not just what you're selling. When you understand the two, you'll be able to sell in a way that becomes much more natural. And so the very first step, step one, is take the time to really understand what you're selling, meaning what the customer thinks they're buying. Step two, okay, would be to create those stories, to turn them into personas, make them identifiable. Let's get these into stories. Let's give them a picture. It's important that we understand who they are. And then step three is to start to think through a scenario. Start to think through how this person would actually buy. Where would they find you? Would they find you on the internet? Would they find you, would they find you by search? Would they be told by somebody? How are they getting to you? And start telling the story of what information they're looking for as they go down their path towards buying from you. That is, once you've done that, if you do nothing more than those three steps, okay, to start out, you will have already told a story of what kind of pages you need on your site and what kind of links you need on your site to move these people along those pages. So now, if you wanted more than that, I think Amazon, Barnes & Noble selling our book for $20. There's certainly much more information that you could do in order to continue a process, okay? But it's really not much more difficult than what I just described. If you simply did that, you'd come up with a much better website.
Okay. So give us your contact details. Tell your book. Tell us about it. It's doing really well, isn't it?
Well, it's funny because Brian likes to tease me.
Okay.
Brian told me when we first started to put together this book, I had said at one point, I don't think we could even sell 5,000 copies of it. Okay, and again, there was a context to it, and I can weasel out of it and say, that I didn't mean exactly that, and I didn't mean exactly that. But here's the deal: book has still not been out for a month, and we've already sold over 20,000 books. And the really cool thing about that is that, even though we've never had books in a national distribution, we've never had, forget international distribution, we never had books just sitting on bookshelves anywhere, okay? In fact, we're pretty sure that we're the very first book in history to hit the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the USA Today bestseller lists without ever having been in a bookstore. And so it's doing pretty well. I mean, I hate to be immodest, but I'm proud of us.
Okay, we bow and scrape. Tell us where we can get the book.
Okay.
You can go to Amazon. You can go to Barnes & Noble, 800-CEO-READ. You can also get it from our directly from our publisher at Wizard Academy Press. You know, if you're here within, you know, the United States, you can actually order it from our site as well. We have a site dedicated to the book at calltoactionbook.com.
So that's calltoactionbook.com, one word.
Right, and actually what's really neat is that calltoactionbook.com, if somebody's considering whether they should buy the book or not, what's really easy is they can download some sample chapters, and it makes a pretty good read. We have, I think it's, 40, 45 pages, Brian?
A little less than that, but something along those lines.
All right, whatever it is, it's a few chapters that they can really get a flavor for the book.
That's really cool. Well, thanks for speaking to us again, Jeff and Brian. It's been great to speak to you. And I'm going to see you guys in New York sometimes. We'll do lunch, dinner, and everything else.
I certainly hope so.
Anytime.
Okay.
Thank you for having us, Sean. We love talking to you. And they'll get a. And by the way, seriously, I thought the article yesterday was excellent.
Thank you. Actually, we got a lot of response from that one article. It was surprising how many people wrote back.
It's what I said. Look, you are one of the few that I don't toss.
Okay.
You're in my not junk rules.
Okay. Well, thanks for speaking to us again.
Thank you for having us, Sean. We hope that everybody who is listening today has really enjoyed what we've had to offer.
I'm sure they will. I mean, I've listened to you in the workshop. I've read your stuff, and today some of those bulbs in my head went off. So. Obviously, they will go off in other people's heads as well.
Well, we hope so. We're all into lighting bulbs.
If you would like to learn how you can improve your business, go to psychotactics.com, where you can get more information on audio, video, and in ebooks. Psychotactics also has tons of very helpful free articles that will help you understand the enigma of the human brain and the psychological triggers that cause your customer to buy. Go to psychotactics.com today. You'll be amazed at what you'll find there.